Have a banana, Hannah.
Hannah.
Try the salami, Tommy.
Oh, Tommy.
Here with the gravy, David.
David.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Welcome to Say Yes to the Chef. Our guest today is Brad Russell of Sake and Takeout Central. And I'm Chef Janice Escott. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, I'm Kelly Taylor. Welcome, Brad. We're happy to have you.
Thank you both so much for this generous invitation. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, we have a whole table full of generous.
Yes, we do.
Today, don't we? And we're going to be talking about that. Sake.
Okay. I'm not a big stickler. It's okay. But sake is,
all right. Okay, that's good. And in front of us, we have a whole bunch of sake. And so tell us, Brad, about yourself first.
Well, I'm Brad Russell, author, owner of North Carolina Sake, also director of operations for the local business Takeout Central. My trip down Sake Avenue or the Sake Stream is a unique one. Basically, I have a sort of selective type of learning, I'll put it that way. A professor of mine best put it once, I can't get him to read something he will not be interested in, but if he is interested, he'll read that and then everything else beyond it. So once it was computers when I was a kid, I then built my own. So if I get interested in something and it clicks, I kind of have to follow it to its throughout to the furthest extent. And so with sake, it was a perfect match. I've always been passionate about Japanese culture, film, food. But when I really had what, and this is a term I'll probably be guilty of throwing around quite a bit, is true sake, which is a little vague. But when I first had my experience with a true artisan craft sake, it clicked that whatever part of my brain is. And 15 years after studying and being certified and really following it through, I can tell you that it's been a wonderful journey and a really rewarding one. I'm very proud to be here to discuss something that I feel very passionate about.
So when did you have the sake?
Yeah. So, well, you can imagine my father's face when I held my sake diploma in front of him, which is something I literally have. You can see it. There's a photo of it. But he's very proud. That it's something I joke about with there's a class I teach, but in all seriousness, I did was very fortunate to have the support of my dad and my folks and my lovely wife. But they followed me through this and sort of knew that knowing that sort of the way I go about my passions, that this would be something that they should support. And they did, and thank and bless them for it. But I was at Waraji in Raleigh. Waraji is the most fantastic Japanese restaurant, I think, on the East Coast. It's the head chef is Chef Masa, a really wonderful individual, and also shares this passion. He's actually from the same prefecture that this particular sake is brewed from. And it is Yamaguchi, and that's a southwestern prefecture. But
and it's a beautiful bottle of sake that's on our counter here.
It is gorgeous. We're looking at Desai 23. Long story short, I had that initial flight. It was a small flight of ochokos, the tiny cups.
Ochoko is a tiny cup?
This is the tiny cup.
It's even smaller than an espresso cup. It's like half the size of an espresso cup.
Yep. And this kind of leads into some great facets of sake culture and also some misconceptions as well. We'll kind of talk about that. But so after that, I was that flame was ignited, and my first formal training, I should say my, went out immediately and read Bo Temkin. Bo Temkin is there's sort of a triad, if you will, of master sake experts in the English speaking world, and Bo Temkin is the first proprietor of the first sake only store in the United States. It's True Sake in San Francisco. He's also the author of Modern Sake. I read his book and I wrote him, and he is a wonderful person with a wonderful heart, and he took the time to write me back
nice.
And said, "Follow this. You're on the right path, but keep going. And then I had some questions about pursuing this professionally, and he was kind enough and gracious enough to help me and guide me on that. I then went to Baltimore and studied under the second master in this little triad, and her name is Tiffany Dawn Soto. She runs Sake to You Consulting, and at the time was the head of all of the Four Seasons. She was their kind of main beverage professional, but she was the sake sommelier for this restaurant called Pabu in the Four Seasons in Baltimore. That's the first official sort of course I took. Mm-hmm. And then that led to ultimately a few years later making the big step to go to what is essentially Sake College. And that is a week-long course, and it's held by what's called the Sake Education Council, run by the third triad, the main master himself, Mr. John Gottner, who is the most impassioned, amazing professor of anything. I think he could have taught something no one would have had an interest in, and done it so that you would have. He leaves no sake stone unturned.
And where is he?
He lives in Japan, but he also does this course twice a year, the level one course. So what it's called is the Sake. The Sake Education Council is the sort of the name of the overall university or the
body. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the course is called the certification as a sake professional. So I'm a certified sake professional, and he teaches it twice a year in the U.S. in New York, Dallas, Chicago, San Francisco, and I was fortunate enough that when he taught it in the level one course in Las Vegas. I had been to Vegas a few times for business, so I sort of know how to go to Vegas.
And you know how to go to Vegas.
I know how to get there, but I know how to eat affordably and not be distracted. I've actually been to Vegas three times.
That's
I'm
easy
yet to actually go for fun. Yes, but it's actually a place if you do kind of know your way around. It's much more affordable than when it's being taught at like the Four Seasons in Dallas or if it's in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I can do this affordably and be able to pass my final. So it's a 4-day course, 8 hours a day.
Yeah. And this man's like an intensive.
Oh,
right.
Oh yeah. With like a 30-minute break. And I mean, it is
a 30-minute break.
Oh, seriously. But this,
they're not messing around.
No. At the end is a 2-hour, timed long, final exam. And, I stayed and begged him to grade it, which he would not. I asked more questions than probably should have, but it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. And I don't think I slept until I got my grade, which was like 3 or 4 days later. On the flight home, everything.
Really?
I was a nervous wreck.
And then you have to take another. You said part one. There's more than.
Oh, there is. There's a second level.
Okay.
That is in that you. I got a B+, by the way.
So. Very good.
I don't think I've ever shared that before, but
we won't tell.
Okay. The level two is in Japan. That you have to, and so a lot
great
of graduates. Oh, absolutely, and
wow.
And I hope to someday do that. Tiffany Don Soto also does her version. She's a graduate of the. She has every accreditation from the actual Japanese sake literal governing body.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a master sake sommelier. Kikiyaki Ishii, I believe. We're all fluent in Japanese. We're all at least.
Yeah, right. Sure.
So that's that. There you go. I'm lucky to have those three people. We're my mentors and teachers, and that is my official degrees from the Sake Education Council.
Do you? We have to go on break in just a little bit, but so when you get your certification. Because you said earlier, sake sommelier.
Yes.
Is that what you're called the first certification?
It is not.
So that's a longer process.
So sommelier is a relative term. There are different sort of terminology for sake experts. This one is particularly called a certification as a sake professional.
Okay. Well, we have to take a break. You're listening to Say Yes to the Chef on WCHL 97.9. And today we're talking all about sake, which is a fascinating topic. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Have a banana, Hannah.
Hannah.
Try the salami, Tommy.
Oh, Tommy.
Here with the gravy, Davy.
Davy.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Welcome back. This is Say Yes to the Chef. I'm Kelly Taylor with my co-host Janice Escott, and today our guest is Brad Russell of North Carolina Sake, as well as Takeout Central. As many food people have more than one thing going on, Brad is no different. But when we were speaking earlier, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about sake and what it is. We haven't really got to that point yet. We were just sort of understanding sort of what it takes to your journey to learn about sake. So why don't you start us off with telling us what it is, actually.
It's a great place to start, particularly with sake, because there often this is the first question I get. Well, is it rice wine? No. Is it rice beer? Is brewed? Is it rice beer? It's not. Sake is its own thing. Sake is its own unique thing. It's a beautiful thing onto itself and to the people of Japan. It really is neither one of those things. It is brewed similar to beer, but it's enjoyed and more like a wine. But really, it's its own thing because it's made from an inaccessible starch, so to speak. So instead of having, you know, your grape and you cut it and you've got your sugar and you're good to go, or your barley and your hops, getting what's called the shimpaku, the heart of the grain of rice, the white heart, the pure starch, getting that out and getting the outer parts of the literal grain of rice away, the proteins, the amino acids, that outer shell, and getting to just that pure starch is a very laborious task. It's difficult, and it's its own thing. So it's just
Start with the whole grain. You brought us a sample of the rice.
I did. So I brought you some different. That is all the same type of rice, but it's polished to different levels of quality. But so that's my typical answer is that just throw those sort of kind of preconceptions away. It's its own thing. Sake is its own thing. Some amazing things about it right out of the gate. It's kosher. It's gluten-free. There's no sulfites. It's a third the acidity of wine. It's also about, depending on who you ask, about 40 to 50 calories for a full pour. So it's very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
It's 80% water. So it's very light on your system. And so some people would argue if you were to, let's say, choose a spirit to over and buy, Ben, obviously one with all of those lovely aspects to it is much better in the morning. We'll just put it that way.
I saw on the bottle that you brought that it's 15% alcohol. So explain that.
Sake is incredibly diverse. There are over 1,500 different breweries that are operating in artisan craft breweries, not just the big boys, the Budweisers of the industry. There are literally that many, and there are almost that many types of varieties. It is a diverse beverage. The alcohol content can be very low in some. They can be 2-3% alcohol, but there are some that are high. Legally, sake can't even be called sake if it exceeds 19% in the alcohol content. But
so then they consider it a wine, or
so they. Well, again, they consider it sake. It's its own thing, and the alcohol content. I think on everything with sake, there's a short answer and a long answer. I think that the perfect way is to say that it depends on the type of sake, but in general rule of thumb, it's not much more higher in alcohol content than your standard white wine.
Mm-hmm.
It really isn't. And I think part of that misconception comes from the little cups you might see. And especially in Japanese film, you see these little cups always being sort of shot, for lack of a more proper term, but it's not. It's not hard alcohol. It's not booze.
It's kind of a sipping wine, really, to me, or if you want
to
call it
wine. Are you supposed
to
sip it? So you're not supposed to... How are you supposed to drink it?
Okay, so and again, there's a short answer and a long answer. But the good sake, the good stuff, the true sake is generally you want to serve it chilled or to room temperature. There are exceptions. There are a lot of people's first experience with sake is what I call the flaming ceramic jug, if you will. If you go to the hibachi bar and they kind of give you sake, it's unbelievably hot. That's to mask.
I've had that.
That's to mask the flavor. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So now, if you like warm sake, that's great too. There's a few artisan brewers that specify. There's a beautiful bottle that literally loosely translates to "Leave me in the sun, take a nice walk in the forest, and when you come back, I'll be ready." It's literally what it's called, and it's a great sake.
That's what it's called.
So, but the majority is of this when we're talking about sakes that are junmais, that are junmai ginjos and daiginjos, you would serve those chilled. And yes, I would – the most preferable way would be in a white wine glass or a nice Italian kind of water glass, something that you can splash it around, smell it, and enjoy it the same way as well.
I have been served sake in a little wooden box.
Ah, yes.
So tell me about that. Why? And I never did figure out why they served it in a little wooden box.
Do you want the long answer? Or
the just running theme with you today. Yeah.
I love the little box. That is traditionally, there's two reasons. One, it's fun. It's lovely to drink out of. It is traditional. And then when you're drinking out of a square, you get the little bit of drops on the side of your mouth and it spills a little bit.
True.
It also gives you that smell of cedar. But that little box is traditionally a form of measurement for rice.
Oh,
so one of those is, I believe, someone eventually said, well, we're already using this to measure how much rice I'm purchasing from you to make it fair. So why don't we take this, pour my sake into it so that I know that I'm getting a fair pour.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the long answer.
I see. Okay. Well, I just know that it was delicious.
It is. I love those. And that's a really great way, the way that they're serving sake now. And I should say, you know, when I started this 10 or 15 years ago, I would see in the deeper in periodicals, you know, these little stories popping up like, ooh, the U.S. is importing more sake. Sake, you know, being produced in Portland. And I was like, okay. But then over the years.
Of course, Portland.
Of course. Texas is now. There's a very hot woman today. But so over the years, those stories went from, you know, page 10 up to page 5. And then I'm like, oh. Yamada Nishiki, which is the mother rice of sake, it's the rice most used in sake, is being grown so much that's helping stabilize the economy in Japan. So like, there's been this incredible resurgence, but mostly through exports. So the U.S. now imports more sake than any country, and we're now consuming more than any country.
Huh.
Sake had a very caustic end of the 20th century in Japan. It dropped, the consumption and production dropped by 2/3.
In Japan?
Yeah.
Why did it drop?
Beer became popular, cheap American beer and French wine. Uh-huh. Sake became your grandfather's drink. Mm. It was just, it did not translate over. The work is intense and is almost year round, and you'd be living and working in your great great grandfather's grandfather's grandfather's. The fifth oldest company in the world is a sake brewery. So it's something that a lot of that around the 80s, when the time came, do I proceed or do I follow through with the wishes of my family, or do I go into the city and get a job? And a lot of people decided to do that. The great thing is so, but imagine if we stopped drinking beer and by 2/3, you know, the 2/3 of that. But that's not even a fair comparison because we didn't even make beer. You know, Germany just said we're going to stop drinking it by less than half. And I mean, so but there has been thankfully this revitalization by outside interest, from foreign interest, but also what Japan did in some of these small craft artisan sake brewers, they took it and instead of adding flavors and cartoon characters, they decided to, and especially this one bottle here, Desai, this brewery said, let's take this back. Let's take ownership of it, pride of it, and let's make the best sake that has ever existed.
Well, I'm glad they took it back so that we could be here today with you and we get to sample some. It was beautiful. Yeah. So we have to take a break. You're listening to Say Yes to the Chef on 97.9 WCHL. We'll be right back.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy.
Oh, Tommy.
Here with the gravy, David.
David.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
You're listening to Say Yes to the Chef. Today, our guest is Brad Russell of Sake. I think it's North Carolina Sake.
North Carolina Sake.
North Carolina Sake. My name's Kelly Taylor, and my co-host is Janice S. Scott. If you're just joining us, Brad is sharing all of his knowledge about sake, which is fascinating because I don't really know that much about it other than the bad samples I've had. So now I would like to learn how to buy good sake. It's like when I think, you know, you're a little intimidated when you go and you don't know anything about wine. Well, if you don't, and you're trying to buy a good bottle of wine, it's the same principle. It seems like a foreign thing. And how do I pick out a good bottle?
It's totally analogous. That is also something that, you know, I got into this to help promote and to help people find sake, but enjoy it, especially around the Carolinas where that can be a little difficult. But sake is becoming more popular, and you are finding it in restaurants that are not just, you know, Japanese specific. They're not just sushi bars. Some places are now carrying it. I think you're going to find that to be more and more the case.
So it pairs with what food? What kind of food would you choose to pair it with?
So there's always kind of with any pairing, there's sort of two schools of thought, either contrast or complement. Mm-hmm. I'd like to tell, and I think what you said is very true. There's some very bad first impressions for sake, but I think there's no wrong answer to it either. I think if you like what you like, that's great. And there's the sake bomb, which some people are enjoying, which is sake poured into a beer. And that's the only thing that I'm kind of against. Please don't do that with really good sake. But, you know, I always just say, you know, whatever, the more sake, the better. But when you're purchasing sake, or when you see a menu, you're right, it can be a little intimidating. You don't know exactly what you're getting. There are some rules of thumb. A quick one to follow is what's called the SMV, the sake meter value. If you are looking at a sake menu or a bottle, you're going to find on it somewhere a number, and it's going to be in the range of negative 10 to positive 10, let's say. So this sake, the one you're looking at, right, that the SMV stands for sake meter value, and the general idea is the higher the number, the drier. So a plus 3 to 4 is a moderately dry sake. A plus 10 would be a very dry sake.
Where does it have the number on? You brought some really beautiful bottles, I have to say.
That is
fascinating.
That's a little bit different type of sake. That is what's called a namazake, which is my personal favorite. Those are unpasteurized, very super fresh. They're very big and bold sakes. But so look for the SMV. The higher, the drier. It's a plus 5, plus 6. You're looking at a drier, sort of a martini drinker sake, and the lower would be sweeter. You can find sake the best places, and I should probably mention this. The class I teach is at Raleigh Wine, the Raleigh Wine Shop, which if you've never been to is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's also the best place to find sake locally. They do refrigerate their sake. They can order your sake. Southern Season has some sakes. They carry some very high-end stuff and some very low-end stuff. The Carborough, there's a place in Carborough that's now like a specialty beer and wine shop. They also now have some in their refrigerator, which is fantastic.
Cool.
The mother of all, if you're in Charlotte, is the Grand Asian Market. Go in there and ask for my buddy Forrest.
We're looking at a beautiful gray, triangularly shaped bottle that says Thai Ku.
Yes.
So why would I choose that if I saw it in an ABC store, for instance? Or where are these sold? ABC stores?
They're not. So,
those places he was saying, the wine store.
So you can buy them in a wine store and you can buy them anywhere. So why would I choose that?
Okay, so what you're looking at is Thai Ku's June Mai. And why I brought that is because this is a sake you can find at Harris Teeter anywhere in Chapel Hill.
Great.
Oh,
great. And again, it kind of gets back to the original point and I think your listeners obviously are people who are passionate about the music they listen to, the food they eat, where they dine. And you would not have been able to go to the Carver or Harris Teeter or any a decade ago and found an actual June Mai sake, let alone one made from Yamada Nishiki rice. So Thai Ku is – they really want to be – and I've met the owner. He's an awesome 7-foot-tall Australian gentleman. He was there at one of our tastings in Las Vegas when I was doing my formal training. And his goal is literally just to bring this and popularize it in the United States. And obviously he did put a lot of thought behind the marketing and the design of the bottle. But so it stands out. But why you should try this is because you can find it easily. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, it's made of real rice, of real sake rice. And it's a very good representative of a June Mai, which is a bolder sake. Getting back to your pairing question, I'm not going to, lie to you. The truth is that sake is a little bit elegant, a little bit more evaporative in its palate. You can have some very strong notes and tones initially, vanilla, honeydews, mm-hmm. all sorts of wonderful first impressions, but it dissipates, which is fantastic. And also we were talking about some that are incredibly sweet. So I've had a sake that's -20 and it almost tastes like cotton candy. But when you're out seeing, maybe the North Carolina Symphony at Kokoboo and it's 99 degrees out, this is a great sake for that.
No,
and
it doesn't,
it's not like having a Jolly Rancher or something. Like it dissipates. Mm-hmm. But so for the pairing, obviously, if you're going to have something as strong as a chocolate slice of cake, go with your red wine or a cup of milk. Or if you're going to have hot wings, have an IPA. But that being said, grilled foods, salads, fish, there's a whole wonderful – you can have sake with anything. Mm-hmm. It does pair really well with – and it does not have just to be your sashimi friend. You can have it with anything.
So the one we're talking about in the gray bottle is Thai Ku, T-Y-hyphen.
Yep.
Is that a hyphen?
K-U.
And that's nice that you can get it at Harris Teeter.
And Whole Foods carries it as well. It's mm-hmm. and then I would encourage you to experiment and go to a craft shop like a Raleigh Wine or a place that does the Wine Authority in Durham. Also, they do a great job too. They carry some real excellent sakes. Another kind of rule of thumb, a Niigata sake is a prefecture, N-I-I-G-A-T-A, just like your knee. Mm-hmm. And Niigata is important because that prefecture in Japan is where per capita the most craft artisan sake breweries are.
Hmm.
And they're very proud of that. It's kind of like sake in Japan is a little bit similar to the way we treat barbecue in the South, or it's a little bit competitive and a little bit of love, and there's points of pride in each sake in each prefecture of who's making the pests.
It's confusing to me. They're all coming from the same ingredients. Are they just rice? Or are they adding something else in there?
So the four key ingredients are and they're all argued about which is the most important.
Okay.
The water is key. They say that the water is almost the brewer's gold mine,
mm-hmm.
and that's often passed down through many generations. So water, rice, obviously, and the other two is where it gets a little bit more interesting, is kojiken. It's a kojiken is a mold. It's called Aspergillus arosae, I believe, is the proper scientific term. It's a mold spore native to Japan, and what it helps do is take steamed cooked rice and break down the sugars, break the starch down into sugars.
Sugar. Mm-hmm.
The last is the so there's the rice, water, kojai, and then the final is a yeast. There is a those are and the yeast is controlled by the government as the sake's government board and council and legality has a certain number of approved yeasts you can add at the end. Those start the ferment to help start the fermentation, and they also do add notes, flavors, hints. But there's a magic to this. The method, the artistry, the water somewhere, and all of that is the magic that happens. And they'll all argue which is the most important.
Well, thank you. That's fascinating. I think we could talk for a lot longer about this, but we do have to go just for a short break. You're listening to Say Yes to the Chef on WCHL 97.9. We'll be right back.
Have a banana, Hannah.
Hannah.
Try the salami, Tommy.
Oh, Tommy.
Here with the gravy, David.
David.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
I'm Kelly Taylor with my co-host Janice Escott and our guest today, Brad Russell of North Carolina Sake. And the website is the same, North Carolina, spelled out, sake, sake.com. And if you're just joining us, we are learning a lot about sake today, including how to pronounce it, sake, and what it is and what it looks like and how to buy it and what to eat with it. It's been a very fascinating show so far. And I wanted to touch base, too. We have this packet that you brought that has the rice. So sake is made from rice, fermented rice. And you brought a little packet that's a plastic little packet. It has four separate compartments. The first one has the original grain in it. It's a kind of light brown.
Mm-hmm.
Yellowish brown, whole grain. And then it's polished down in each compartment. So tell us about this process and why it's so important to good sake.
Exactly. So sake classification, there's some grades. And for lack of a better word, quality. Because I don't want you to think, and another misconception is that the only sake worth drinking is very expensive or has to be a Daigenjo. But the general grades are, it starts with a Junmai. That is a sake produced from rice that has been polished at least 30%. So 30% of that outer part of the rice grain has been polished away.
Okay.
Junmai Genjo. Genjo, now we're talking about real premium sake. At least 40% has been taken away. So you have 60% of the remainder of that original grain. So you're getting closer and closer to that pure starch. Once you get to 50%, now we're talking about the highest grade of sake produced. That is Daigenjo sake. Junmai Daigenjo. If the word Junmai is not in your sake, it's almost like a Junmai means – it doesn't directly translate to this, but it means just water. If Junmai, that little prefix, is not there in the sake you're ordering, all it means is that at the end of the process, the brewer might have added a little distilled alcohol to bring out a certain note or flavor. So if your Junmais – your Junmai Genjos and your Junmai Daigenjos. But if that Junmai isn't there, it's what's called a Hanjozo. But
so Junmai is J-U-N-M-A-I. I'm reading it from the bottle in front of me.
Yes.
Okay. So people can see that. Okay. So you have three classifications within the Junmai. And then if it isn't a Junmai, it's the other one.
And the first, yeah.
And it's still, they're still considered real sake, even though it's not a Junmai, you know.
Well, there's a lovely war going on about that, too. Is Hanjozo the real thing or not? Mm-hmm. There are festivals that will not allow Hanjozos. Mm. There are festivals that will only have Hanjozos. But the higher the polishing rate, the more elegant the sake, the more subtleties, you're going to taste the difference. Mm-hmm. Now, you can still purchase Daigenjos that are not going to run you, you know, $100. You know, you can taste very good Daigenjos for less. But well, there's also in the sake world what's called almost a polishing race. And you can see with the grains I brought, Desai has exceeded that 50% mm-hmm. barrier to 23. Their most famous.
Meaning they've milled away 77%.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And you're left with 23%
of that grain.
Which is mm-hmm. it's a tiny little.
It's like the.
Like a size of a sesame seed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, almost the tip of a pen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's pretty
very small.
Mm-hmm.
So they are producing. No one has ever done that. There are sakes that are pushing it even further. There's an 11, and there's going to be. So some would argue.
Be anything left if you.
Exactly. Some will argue. Can you really taste the difference at that point? And mm-hmm. I love the counter argument. I love both. I mean, one, no, I don't think that it is. Past 23 is a little excessive. But at the same time, I heard this answer that someone was like, "What? You're going for a one?" And the brewer said, "Of course." I mean, so I love it's. And another thing, too, people ask about cooking with sake. Do I use a good sake if I'm cooking, or do I just grab a bottle of Gekkokan or whatever is. A cheap bottle that you can just pick up, and there's great counter arguments for both. Like, no, don't use great sake for cooking. But then it's like, but if I'm cooking something really good, I'm using a little bit, and then I get to enjoy this wonderful bottle of sake. I'm like, all right, that's a good argument
sense.
Too. But
well, it's like when you cook with wine, you don't want to cook with a terrible tasting wine either,
because your food will be terrible tasting.
Yes,
exactly.
Even a little bit of it makes a big difference. So you want to have a good flavor at the beginning.
So the range goes from Junmai to Daigenjo. Junmai Genjo, and then Junmai Daigenjo, and the Daigenjos are obviously that elite, very. End of the spectrum. But there's a whole other family of sake. I want to quickly mention they're called namas. These are non-pasteurized, fresh. They're kept cold, brewed cold, shipped cold, served cold, and they're my favorite type of sake. And they're not the most expensive sake either. If you can get – there are some breweries that make nama year-round.
How do you spell that?
Nama is just N-A-M-A. This one, Narototai Nama, this Narototai Genshu, is mm-hmm. that is, I have never not been able to convert someone with that particular sake.
This is actually a metal can with a screw
top. It is. This mm-hmm. is a great sake. It's produced on this small island off the southeast coast of Japan. And they are, it's a very small island, and they're a fishing community, and they also are a manufacturer. There's, long story short, they use these recycled oil cans for this sake that they produce.
Nice.
And no one had ever had it. And then getting back to Botemkin was over and went to this island and tried it and said, the world has to have this sake. And he convinced them to export it.
And you can buy this in here around mm-hmm. town?
Yep. Another, SakeSocial.com, Aster Wine, Sakaya in New York. There's some great online places to order sake from as well. But no, specialty stores can carry it. Now, the weather makes ordering nama sakes a bit of a pain.
Because it has to stay refrigerated.
Exactly.
That's expensive.
A great sake. And even if I beg, if I call Sakaya in the village in New York, I'm like, please send me a nama sake. Because all these breweries, too, when spring comes, they launch their namas, their fresh release. Mm-hmm. They're phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But they'll call me and say, Brad, it's going to be 70 all week long. This is
not
going to
work.
But there are years when you can get namazakis, those seasonal sakis, those first releases, you can have them shipped. And I would highly encourage you to try a namazaki, a seasonal first release.
Well, I'd like to read from the back of this label because it's so interesting. It says, flavorful type, gorgeous, sweet aromas, and refreshing fruity aromas. Very powerful dry sake with great acidity. Served chilled only. Store in the refrigerator. Fascinating. Interesting.
And you have a class, which we briefly talked about earlier, where that goes into more detail and hopefully have tastes.
Yes,
can't taste
you do.
Through the radio.
Yes,
but tell us where people can find out about that.
Well, James and Seth, the owners of Raleigh Wine Shop, I went in years ago and started asking questions, and they said, look, I don't know what you're asking. I don't know what you're talking about. And then I eventually got them to bring in a few sakes and taste a few. And James Volz, the one owner, was getting into sake and said, let's do a class. Mm-hmm. And he took a real risk. I was literally just that guy off the street, and he was afforded me this amazing opportunity to teach his wonderful clientele. And I had gotten it all prepared and had it all lectured and written out, and then I just threw my notes away because I just, as you can tell, I just like to go with it. so sort of half outlined and kind of half my sake non sequiturs and jokes. And so,
well, if you want to take his class, you should go up to his website, NorthCarolinaSake.com, and you also have a Facebook page, North Carolina Sake.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure he'll put it up there. Thanks so much for being on and even sharing the small amount we could talk about for hours. Probably.
Hours. This has been absolutely fascinating.
Thank you both thank so much. And thank so you for your listeners. And again, I know that you're passionate folks, and I please encourage you to embrace sake. And
and we will.
Thank you so much.
Please like us on our Facebook page, Yes to the Chef. And for more information and to listen to previous podcasts of this program, be sure to visit the website, www.yestothechef.com. Happy cooking, Kelly.
Happy cooking, Janice.
Thank you, Brad.
Kanpai.